This week we have Matt Clark, Canadian racing rising star. He's had a pretty busy year. I think, to be fair, you've probably had the busiest year in the junior single-seater categories in America for the last three seasons, with juggling more than one level of the ladder at the same time and with the opportunities you've got based on your previous success. But this year, I'd say there's a lot of expectation coming in because you've done really well in the previous years and it maybe didn't quite go to plan. Would you agree with that assessment?
I would, and I appreciate the way you led me up. You hyped me up a bit there, but yeah, this year, 2023. I mean, the goal was to really go in and be successful right away, and for us, that didn't happen. We had a really rough start to the season in the USF 2000 category, and then we kind of found our footing in the middle part. But I mean, at the end of the day, we didn't come away with what we wanted, that being the championship.
And how much of that was down to circuit familiarity, or was obviously that very first weekend was so bad compared to what the rest of the season would be. Did that kind of throw you off what you're expecting going forward there on?
I think so, yeah. We had a lot of mechanical issues during the season. We had an engine let go. We had some electronics issues. So I think that definitely didn't, set the stage nice for the whole season, for the remainder of it, and definitely put us on our back foot in terms of championship points as well. I mean, in a series that's so competitive, you have one or two bad weekends, it can really affect how the whole calendar year shapes up.
And does that actually change how you then approach those weekends and attack them? If you already know you're behind in the points and you're in that chasing position, does that change what you're going to do when you go to the track on like Thursday?
That's a great question, and I love that question because, in my opinion, it does. I'd never really been in a situation where I was chasing so much until this year, and I do feel like it affected me definitely in the racing a little bit. As you get to the third and fourth weekend of the year where you're behind, you really have to put your foot to the metal and make up some points. I wouldn't say it was a positive or a negative impact on myself as a driver, but I definitely felt it. I don't know if it was a little bit more pressure or what it was, but it was sitting in the back of my mind for sure.
So would you say it's almost useful to have that kind of season now in your career rather than later on at a higher level where it's, everything else is hyping up the pressure as well?
I would have to agree with that 100%. I think this was a great learning year for me. It didn't go the way we wanted, but I'd rather have it now at like a USF 2000 kind of level versus, maybe next year, the year after, when I'm starting to get closer to the NTT IndyCar series, when it really matters. Not that this year didn't matter. It was definitely important for my development, but when the eyes of the world are on you and you're looking to make that transition into professional racing, I think it's even more important to have a good year. Whereas this one, we can kind of chalk up to, okay, this went wrong. Let's fix it for next year and let's go win another title.
Yeah, are you already looking at not only next year, but have you already gone through that review stage of what went well and what didn't this season? And I presume, knowing the relationship with the team you've been racing with, are you maybe staying with them next year as well?
So nothing is confirmed yet. I should have an answer for you guys in the next coming weeks. The goal for next year is USF Pro 2000. So as you mentioned, I got a really cool opportunity to move up actually for one of the last races in Austin, Texas at COTA, the Formula One circuit, and it went really well. We had a pole position, two podiums. So that kind of, set us up for 2024. But I'm definitely into like the full off-season swing where I'm looking back at last year, reviewing it mentally, working on things that, I need to work on as a driver to make 2024 even better.
Yeah, and you mentioned obviously how good that first weekend in USF Pro went. That's like a trend through every series and every car you've ever raced in. You start off and you are on it straight away, win, pole, podium, fastest lap, whatever it is. And then it's not always easiest to continue that. Why do you adapt so quickly to new cars?
Honestly, I'm not too sure. I think it honestly stems back all the way from the karting days. My father was a racer before me, and growing up, he was always my mechanic. Like, I never had a mechanic. It was always like the dad mechanic type program. And he was not hard on me, but he would purposely put me in any car, any track that he could, in any configuration, to try to get me to adapt quickly. And I think that's kind of a skill that I've honed in on. Not saying there isn't room for improvement, but I think any great race car driver, if you look at anyone driving at the professional level, one of like the sure tells is that they're very, very quick to adapt. So, I mean, that's a skill that I try to pride myself in, something that I, want to use going forward to impress people.
And does that help with communication with engineers and mechanics as well, having that understanding as soon as you jump in a car to tell them what you want to have worked on and where you feel you're doing well or bad within that car?
It definitely does. And I think it almost shows them right away that you're in tune, right? So once you can kind of, it's a weird relationship with a driver and an engineer, but once you can prove to an engineer that you know what you're talking about and that you're fast and that you have the intellect to kind of work with him, then it becomes much easier. It's a relationship that almost like builds upon from when you start to, you know, mid-season or end-season form. So the communication does definitely get easier if you adapt quickly to the car and the environment around you.
And have you had different engineers each year, or because you've stayed with D-Force Racing, have you been able to have a continuity of like team personnel you've worked with trackside?
It definitely has been like a relatively similar personnel group. We have two in-house engineers, one for USF 2000 and one for USF Pro 2000, and then they both split time with us in USF Juniors. So it was working with those two guys and, you know, really getting to know them. So staying in-house with D-Force for the last 2 years, I think has really helped me kind of grow with them. And when you're comfortable in a situation, it makes it so much easier, especially on a weekend where, you know, maybe you're not performing the best, or even vice versa. When you win, it's even more sweet.
And how many days did you get to do in the USF Pro Car test-wise before you made your race debut? Or is it a completely new car? Obviously, it's very similar to the USF 2001, but how new was it to you before you made your race debut in it?
So I did do one test day. I did one test day down at MSR Houston, where the team is based, and then basically, you know, COTA was my second day in the car. So it was a pretty quick turnaround. There wasn't much testing involved, just because it was such a like heat of the moment opportunity. We really didn't know whether or not it was going to happen. So I'm very grateful for, you know, D-Force Racing for that one. And yeah, so it was one day of testing, and we got to COTA, and I really didn't know what to expect, but I mean, it went well.
What do you make of the COTA track? Because obviously F1's heading there soon, and it was built for kind of European style cars, etc. But it's now one of America's biggest tracks, and obviously a lot of undulation as well. So do you find it very similar to the other Road to Indy tracks that you more regularly race on, or is it quite of an outlier?
I'd say it's an outlier. It's a weird circuit because the first like sector and a half is so flowing, high speed, you know, like you said, very European. You can like see that Formula One's meant to race there, right? And then you look at the back sector and it's like super tight and twisty and a lot different. So it's kind of a weird circuit in where it doesn't flow. Like once you get off the back straight, the back half of the track's completely different than the front. I like it personally. It's one of my favorite tracks on the calendar. And now that I'm starting to move up the ladder and get into faster and faster cars, I feel like that just kind of elevates the hype around COTA.
Yeah, it is a track definitely suited to high levels of downforce, given those first few corners. Obviously, that's probably one of the highlights of the year, but are there any other standout moments in either the series that really kind of either were very good in the moment or on reflection felt even more rewarding?
I think the Freedom 75, the oval win, was just kind of I've arrived or a breakthrough moment. We really struggled up until the fourth or fifth round of the championship when we got to the oval. And I mean, we unloaded the strong car. D-Force Racing did an amazing job, but me getting comfortable on the oval, and you know, LOR is not really a normal place. You got to run the high line. It's progressive banking. It's really strange, you know, as a guy who comes from a road racing background, and to get the job done at the Carbonite Classic, like on the Friday night of the Indy 500, everybody's in town, everybody's watching. It was a really, you know, special moment for me, and I feel like that's still one of my favorite, you know, wins in terms of everything that I've done in my career.
And in terms of the transition to oval racing, how did you find that? And are you looking forward to having more ovals the next level up, and then obviously in Indy next, well, hopefully have even more, but calendar's a bit, you know, in flux going forward for the next few years.
I really do enjoy the oval racing, and I think, you know, accepting the challenge of it was almost what made me so excited. The first day I did on the oval, I claim is like the hardest day that I've ever done in a race car mentally. It is so different to what you're used to as a road racer in so many ways, and I feel like people often don't give oval racing the credit it deserves for how difficult it is. It's extremely technical, you know, just in a different way to road racing. So I am really looking forward to it. I know usually I have two ovals on the calendar for USF Pro 2000. Not sure if that's going to be happening for 2024. And then obviously moving up towards Indy Next and IndyCar. I mean, you get to IndyCar, it's half the schedule, right?
It is at the moment. The kind of problem with IndyCar now is because it's becoming more popular abroad, they're looking at doing like maybe the race in Argentina, all these other places, which will inevitably be road or street circuits. They're not going to be ovals. And the tracks that are most likely to be dropped are probably the ovals. Even Texas, we might not be going there soon. And Gateway really got hit by the weather this year. So that's always a challenge compared to street courses where it's a little easier to clear them out. Obviously, you mentioned that kind of difference between road racing and oval racing, but obviously, you've done slicks and wings, but also single seaters on groove tires and no wings at all. So what was that step like? Because that's where like you first gained international attention with your results in F1600.
It was a strange transition. I'd say, the transition that was bigger was karting to cars, right? So like karting to something like Formula 1600, that was bigger. But definitely going from no downforce, a treaded radial tire to proper, wings and slicks. It's kind of strange as a driver because you look at it and everyone tells you with a downforce car, you have to, go faster to have more grip or go faster, be more comfortable. And to break that mental barrier, I think is challenging. It definitely took me a few days in a downforce car to really figure it out. So, that was the main challenge, and it definitely wasn't like a seamless transition. There was a bit of a mental block there, and things that you have to learn, things that are different.
And there's some pretty good tracks that you get a race on in F1600 that you don't get to do once you go higher up the ladder. At the very start of your car racing career, was IndyCar the aim, or were you looking at maybe F1, like European series as well?
I always say that I started too late and on the wrong side of the pond for Formula One. So, I mean, Formula One is a dream, as it is for every young driver. It would be an absolute privilege to drive an F1 car, but it's never really been my focus. And when I initially started car racing, open wheel IndyCar wasn't even the focus at all. Even though I was doing Formula 1600, which was, an open wheel kind of system, it was really the first step in Canada that led to sports car racing. So you kind of prove yourself in Formula 1600, maybe get a championship under your belt. And then we were actually looking at IMSA and transitioning into sports cars because, having a sustainable career in sports car racing, I feel like is more realistic than maybe the open wheel ladder kind of route. And as I got more and more into it, I won more races, I got some opportunities. The Richard Mille Young Talent Academy through Birol, like the kart manufacturer that I race with, that was kind of the eye opener for me. And that really kind of changed the whole geography of my career path. And that was, oh my goodness, maybe we should try open wheel racing and have a crack at it. So, I mean, it just took off from there.
Would you consider juggling sports cars and single seaters in the future? Because even a few Indy Next drivers already do that.
No doubt, no doubt. I think sports car racing is super pure and something that I would love to do in the future.
And looking forward to next year, where we kind of do have the calendar, and obviously you now know the car as well. What are your expectations? Are you kind of going into that season with the same level of, not necessarily hype, but like anticipation as you were going into this USF 2000 campaign? Or are you going to kind of take things down a notch and go, not going to set my expectation too high, I'm going to see what's going to happen, and then set my expectations like one or two rounds in, if that makes sense?
Definitely the first one. I think coming off of COTA and what we did there was special. It's the same attitude as last year. I don't think that you can, let your guard down. Or I believe in myself, and I think that, if I take care of what I need to, I can be the best driver on the grid no matter where I am. So I want to come into the season swinging. I want to get an early points gap like we did in the USF Junior season, and I want to make it happen. I don't want to have another bad start to the year like USF 2000, and I'm determined to not let that happen.
And how important is a scholarship system for you going up ladder as well? Because obviously USF Juniors, you had that package to then come up to this. Have you had to find more budget to then make up the next step, or are you feeling pretty confident budget-wise for the next year and even the year after?
It definitely is a challenge. As we all know, motorsport is very expensive. As of right now, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to do the full season USF Pro 2000. Like it's a very kind of week by week, month by month program without the scholarship. Even last year, I mean, the USF Pro Championships and Anderson Racing Promotions do such an amazing job giving champions the ability to level up. with the scholarship system. Even this past year, we didn't know if we were going to finish the season. So it is it's a constant struggle, and we're always out looking for new long-term partners to come on board with us all the way to IndyCar. So, you know, moving forward, it's always about, you know, keeping your foot in the door, shaking new hands, making new connections. And I mean, we'll try to do it for next year in 2024 and make the full season happen.
And is the plan kind of 1 year in USF 2000, 1 year in USF Pro, try and make Indy Next a 1 year thing as well, to then almost spend as little money as possible, as quickly as possible, to then get to IndyCar?
I mean, that would be the ideal scenario. And even like looking back at the past year, the debate was, okay, are we going to stay down in USF 2000, or are we going to try to make a run for USF Pro? And I think if you've won a few races, you have a few pole positions, and you test well in the new car, that's a general indicator that, you know, you can move up a rank, I guess, in the ladder. We'll see how 2024 goes, and 2025 Indy Next might be possible, you know, depending on budget. But it's all going to work itself out first. I wouldn't say that I have my focus set on Indy Next for 2025. It just kind of depends how 2024 goes.
And aside from the obvious speed difference and I guess high downforce of the level as well, what's the kind of differences that makes the USF Pro 2000 car more enjoyable than the USF 2000 one at road and oval circuits?
I think it just has more of everything, right? It's more horsepower. The rear tires are bigger. The setup's actually a lot more open, so you can play with the rear geometry. There's a lot more stuff that goes on the technical side, so you can improve the car that way. More wing. And I feel like it just kind of suited my driving style. I've always been a driver that's aggressive on the entry and then a little bit late to power. Not that that's necessarily good or bad. Sometimes it works for you, sometimes it doesn't. But I feel like in the USF Pro 2000 car, that kind of suited me and what I was about. And that's what gave me success early on. So I really enjoy the car. I think the platform's great, and I'm looking forward to driving it this coming year.
Yeah, I can say with that kind of style, with bigger, heavier tires, especially on the rear, that's going to help more than a USF 2000 where the geometry is a bit more. I presume the dampers are something you can play around with a bit more in USF Pro as well.
I believe so. So I know the dampers are, so everyone has like spec dampers, it's Carl Haas, but I don't know if there is any adjustment difference from the USF 2000 and the USF Pro 2000. I know we have like obviously bump and rebound options, you can change the spring rate, you can change the position on the rocker arm, but I'm not too sure if there's actually any difference between the two.
Cool, because I know at the next rung up, a lot of drivers talk about damper freedom as their like favored technical change. It goes on. When you're in karting, and I guess even now, who were the drivers or even, you know, other motorsport figures that you were looking up to? And are there any professional drivers now, you know, people who have been watching your career that you're in contact with that you look to for advice, and, you know, maybe sometimes WhatsApp you going like, well done on that race weekend?
Absolutely. James Hinchcliffe, and like a childhood hero of mine, has now become a very close friend. So he's a part of my management team called Speed Group, and I work quite closely with him, you know, away from the racetrack and at it as well. So he travels with the IndyCar circuit because he's with the NBC team doing the broadcasting. But having someone like that, a mentor who has done what you've done, especially for me, come from the same country and a similar background, it helps a lot. Not only from a driving perspective, you know, him giving me tips on what I should be doing at different tracks and different cars, but also just having that reassurance. So he's definitely one of my secret weapons, as I like to call him. And I'm always looking for more of those, because I think any advice or help that you can get from someone who's done what I'm trying to do before is invaluable.
And how big's IndyCar in Canada at the moment? Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about growing South American fan base, even in Europe, like the Alex Palou thing is rocking the F1 world as well. But, you know, the Junior Series are very low profile around here. Like, nobody really knows what Indy Next is, even IndyCar fans over in Europe. So within Canada, is there a lot of attention not only on the top level, but on what drivers are doing at the levels below?
I would say that the attention level is improving. I think I call it like the drive to survive effect, right? So 5, 6, 7 years ago, a lot of people didn't even know what Formula One is, never mind IndyCar, because I'd say IndyCar is a lot less popular than Formula One, obviously, right? And now that you have like an influx of new people that are coming into motorsport as fans, I feel like it's just all kind of trickling down. The Toronto Indy this year was the first time I raced at home in a long, long time, and they had record attendance numbers. So there were like very, very happy about that. And for me, as a kid that was born in the city, it was great to see, you know, hype kind of building around racing and have like local friends and family coming out. And even people that I'm not too close with messaging me and saying, oh my goodness, like it's crazy to see you at the race, blah, 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 blah. So it is growing for sure. And I want to, you know, kind of keep seeing it on that trend.
That's good to hear. Toronto, I have been there to that track, and I've been to the Montreal Formula E and the F1 tracks. Of the three, I'd say Toronto is the best, particularly that run down to turn one. I just love kind of also the fact that if you go like months away from the race, you've still got most of the infrastructure there. Whereas if you go to the Montreal track, it just looks like a park with a road in it. You'd have no idea F1 races there. I think that's a good place to end it on. That's pretty interesting view. I can't wait to hear in a few weeks' time, as you tease what your 2024 program will be. It will be in USF Pro, but we'll find out with whom, and I guess who your teammates will be as well, because that's going to be a big impact on, you know, the targets you're setting and the vibe in the garage as well, as I've seen to some effect in Indy Next already this year. But that's a story to tell another time. Last question I have, actually, and it's one kind of looking at the whole of motorsport. There's a lot of attention on obviously the halo and like biofuels and these kinds of innovations and anything that can make motorsport more sustainable. But at the junior levels, they basically just copy what F1 does. Do you think there's anything that junior single seaters on the logistics side, on the racing side, on the event side could do to make it a more sustainable way to go racing without making it too expensive for you guys to actually take part?
Honestly, I'm not too well versed in the subject, but I do like how you phrase that in the sense that junior racing is tough because everybody's always penny pinching, right? Nobody wants to spend that much money on it because you're not at the top level. So I think IndyCar has a sustainable tire initiative, right? As well as the air screen and the halo. So those kind of things are being integrated, you know, into junior formula. Obviously, I'm lucky that I live in an era where, you know, motor racing has gotten much safer than it was. So I'm very lucky and fortunate for that. But in terms of initiatives that we're doing off the track, I'm not really too sure. I'd like to see the USF Pro Championships definitely take after, you know, the IndyCar kind of sustainability program. And it'd be good to see that come to junior racing.
Cool. Thanks for your time, Mac, and good luck for 2024.
No, thank you for having me.
No worries.